91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour is our popular At Your Service edition, all about the care of pets. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. One issue for the hour is zoonotics, when pets transmit illness to humans and vice versa, when humans transmit illness to animals. Animals can show no evidence of disease, but can still transmit a number of them to humans. Our At Your Service guests are veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in South Miami-Dade, and animal behavior specialist Adele Mietes. He operates the Canine Advisors Firm. Another topic to think about, how to have your pet avoid the anxiety of a vet visit. Dogs and cats read us well. They may react with fear and even aggression at the vet. We'll take your calls after the news. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, Joseph Cooper will be back on Thursday. It's our At Your Service call-in program with esteemed professionals in the studio to take your calls. First, we have veterinarian Dr. Ian Kupke, who heads the Sable Chase Animal Clinic in South Miami-Dade. He's also subservient to his two dachshunds, Zohan and Grendel.
Always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
We'll take your calls, of course. Welcome. Also with us once again is animal behavior professional Adele Mietes, who operates the Canine Advisors Firm. Welcome to you, Adele.
Thank you, Bonnie. Always a pleasure.
Okay, our phone number for you is 800-743-9576. We're going to be talking about, we're just going to start our conversation about zoonotic diseases, but whatever your questions, 1-800-743-9576. Our email is radio@wlrn.org. And you do want to keep those brief so that I can just fire them off. So let's start. Zoonotic diseases. I say it in the billboard. Mm-hmm. Those are diseases that we can transfer to animals or they can transfer to us.
Right, right. So the thing is, around March this year, there was a rabies alert in the area in which I practice, and that actually brought up the realization amongst a lot of pet owners that, in fact, pets could potentially make us sick. And so that's when we thought this would be a good program to focus on. Rabies, of course, is a horrible disease, but completely preventable with vaccine. In fact, it is law in Miami-Dade that you must vaccinate both dogs and cats against rabies. And it's still an issue because we were under rabies watch for a month and for 2 months, and it was a relief when it was declared all clear.
Okay.
But there are other diseases that we can catch from our pets. And
can we start with, just so to push home the point, can we start with diseases we can give them?
Well, actually, thankfully, that's actually a short topic.
Okay.
Because, for example, we have a disease out there called canine flu, canine influenza. There are currently two strains for which we can vaccinate. And we do have people worried that they might catch flu from their dogs. And Cornell actually confirms that that is just not, there's no evidence whatsoever to suggest that that is a possibility. So we can't give flu to our pets, and pets can't give flu to us.
Okay, that's good to know. And colds.
Colds, again, the common cold, rhinovirus, is a human ailment. And you'll see plenty of sneezing kitties, but that isn't a cold that we're going to particularly catch. So we don't have to worry about that. And the other thing I've come across in my career is MRSA, a resistant form of a bacterial infection.
The one that's in hospitals. Often.
Right, right. And sometimes people blame pets for that. But in fact, the CDC in Minnesota have confirmed that MRSA is actually more likely to come from a human healthcare environment. And there's no evidence to suggest that dogs or cats who happen to catch MRSA can give it to us. Chances are, in fact, we might have even passed it to them.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So really, not a lot out there to worry about making our pets sick from things we have. On the other hand, there are things that pets can have that can be passed to us. And the ones that I wanted to cover today, really, leptospirosis, big deal in Florida. It's a very, very common disease. It's spread by the urine of infected wild animals such as raccoons and possums. Actually, the CDC says 100 to 200 Americans can catch this every year. But it's completely preventable. There's a wonderful vaccination against this disease. For some reason, leptospirosis in cats is very rare. So there's only a canine vaccine, but it's just common sense to make sure your pet's vaccinated annually against
this. Is it a bat parasite?
It's a bacterial infection. It's actually something called a spirochete, and it can cause kidney failure, liver failure. It's a nasty disease. And
so dogs generally carry it?
Well, dogs...
If they're not vaccinated.
Dogs that are unvaccinated can catch it because the bacteria is all over the place.
So if they just go where a possum urinated or something, right, or a raccoon, then they can
catch
it.
Exactly. And especially when we have flooding, leptospirosis is a huge risk. And of course, we are in tropical season, so we see a lot of flooding. So it's a horrendous disease, but it's completely preventable by vaccine, and it's an annual vaccine.
Can we talk about... Sorry, Adele, because we're not talking about...
no worries.
Oh, the behavioral questions will come flooding in any moment now.
Actually, they are coming in already.
Yes, indeed.
Okay? Again, our number, 1-800-743-9576. If you have a question about your animal, your pet, 1-800-743-9576, or email is radio@wlrn.org. We're with Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Miedes from Canine Advisors. The one I want you to talk about is toxoplasmosis.
Yes, yes. Now, this is something we hear a lot from mothers-to-be and basically anybody who's thinking of starting a family. Toxoplasmosis, it's a single-cell organism. It can infect 60 million Americans per year, very few of whom become ill. And the most common question we get from somebody who's anticipating a child is, do they have to get rid of their cat now that they're pregnant? According to the CDC, the answer is absolutely not. You do not need to get rid of your cat if you're pregnant or planning to be pregnant. You're more likely to catch toxoplasmosis from gardening without gloves, from eating unwashed vegetables or undercooked meat. What I do tell my clients is have someone other than the expectant mother clean the litter box, keep your cats indoors exclusively, and get used to cleaning the litter box daily, ideally daily, perhaps even twice daily. But keep your litter boxes squeaky clean, and there's no reason why the cat can't coexist with the expectant mother and never cause her harm.
Which is a point I want to make with all these illnesses and these diseases we're talking about. It's to inform you and educate you. It's not to discourage you from adding a pet to your family.
No.
It's not for you to get rid of the animals you have, nor is it to encourage you pets to get rid of your human companions.
That's great.
Okay. So what's the next?
Well, this is like if you own a car, you insure your car. To drive a car without insurance, as well as being illegal, is just dumb. You know, you need to have an insured vehicle if you're going to drive on the roads. And if you're going to have a pet, there's vaccines and preventatives to keep yourself safe and to keep your pet safe. Intestinal parasites is a huge issue. A lot of people don't realize this, but there are worms that our pets carry that can be transmitted to people. But
how are they transmitted?
The term is the oral fecal route, and that sounds as disgusting as it is.
So it's from cleaning the litter?
Well, it's actually most commonly the exposure issue is with children. Don't touch your face without washing your hands. Don't eat finger food while you're petting your pet. Wash your hands regularly. Clean under your nails. These are all common hygiene protocols adults are used to, but children less so.
Right.
But the number one thing is that if you keep your pets on a monthly so-called heartworm preventative, it also covers hookworms and roundworms if you get the right product, and then your pets are protected and worm-free.
What kind of diseases are carried by ticks and fleas other than Lyme disease? I know Lyme disease is carried by...
Lyme is an issue. Down here, we also have something called ehrlichiosis. I've actually found ehrlichiosis more common than Lyme in this area. I have not seen a case of Lyme from this area except for one that came from New York State.
Oh.
So generally, you don't want ticks on your pet. So the key there is, again, a decent preventative. These days, the preventative I recommend is oral. The topicals, in my experience, are not that effective. But that, again, is part of a regular...
What is it called?
The one I like is NexGard. It's a same product that's made by the people who make HeartGard. And it's a once-a-month pill, and both of my dogs are on it, and I don't see ticks or fleas. So I'm happy, you know. Okay. I don't have to worry about that. Certainly, you shouldn't wait until you see fleas or ticks on your pet before putting them on a preventative, because by then the horse is bolted, you know, the stable door is open.
Right. Okay, we're going to get back to zoonotic diseases in a second, but let's get a couple of questions in from our listeners. Al wants to know what he can do about a terrier who chases kids on bikes and scooters, Adele.
Yes, very, very common in terriers, as a matter of fact.
Is it?
Yes, terriers are generally just high energy, high drive dogs. Aside from perhaps a little obedience and structure work, one of the best things to do with terriers is to find alternative ways of releasing their innate prey drive. A drive that they're born with, which is basically to follow something and prey on it. Not that the dog wants to prey on the skateboard or the kids, but the action, the moving action, gets the dog's drive going. So a lot of times, there's a number of ways that we can, depending on the motivation of that dog, be able to reduce or, in essence, use up that drive and then have the dog exposed to the kid on a skateboard. There's also desensitizing that can be done by using a skateboard and just walking the dog alongside with a skateboard, like a little cane or something. So the dog just gets used to slow-moving skateboard. Mm. And then little by little, we start moving the skateboard a little further up. However, we would have already used up the dog's energy and gotten him a little tired by the time we did that, so that when he starts seeing moving skateboards, it's not that much of a big deal. It's not that fun anymore.
Okay, Al, there you go. We're going to have to take a short break. It's Topical Currents. Again, our number, we have phone calls. We're asking you to just be patient, and we're going to get to them. 1-800-743-9576 is the number. The email is radio@wlrn.org. We'll be right back. Back with today's Topical Currents, Bonnie Berman with Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mietes from Canine Advisors. We're talking about zoonotic diseases to start, but what we were talking about during the break, and Adele comes in on this, is that one of the reasons you don't give your pets vaccinations sometimes and avoid all of these zoonotic diseases is because your dog or cat doesn't want to go to the vet because they hate every time you bring out that box. So, Adele, let's talk about that. So
it's a very good point, Bonnie. It's just like our pets are our kids. We don't like to see them suffer. We don't like to put them through suffering type situations. And whenever we've taken the pet to the veterinarian and it's been a very traumatic event for the pet, it tends to get us thinking twice or perhaps not taking the pet to the veterinarian unless we see something drastic. And one of the key words we're using here today is preventative, which right. is super important. So in that process, one of the things that we'll want to do is just take your pet, rather, your dog, your cat, over to your veterinarian and just have them get a little cookie, a little treat, hang out for 5 or 10 minutes, pet them a little bit, have the staff pet them, and leave.
Yeah.
And do this a few times a year if you can. It's not asking that much. I think most veterinarians out there are willing to help with this because it will then make your pet's experience a lot better. You might have done this 2 or 3 times before the next time that you have to go, and now your pet has to get seen and maybe prodded a little bit, but then you come back and you do it a few other times. And at the end of the day, animals learn through a process of associational patterns.
I'm just thinking they should have a playroom at these vets' offices, not just those sterile offices,
yes.
You know, examination rooms, where these animals can just come and play and eat their little biscuits.
That's a great idea. A lot of veterinarians do have nowadays some daycare and things like that also involved within their practice. But just going into the office, even if possible, going into an exam room and just putting the pet on the table and giving the pet a couple little treats, a little pet, having maybe just a tech. I'm sure the veterinarian might be busy, but maybe a tech can come by, give them a little pet, give them a little treat, and then leave. That's it. Make it short and simple and positive in the pet's mind.
So again, it's like conditioning.
It is conditioning. That's what it is.
You were also saying about taking them for other things in the car other than the vet.
Exactly. And just to say, too, that there's a growing movement within the veterinary profession called Fear Free, and that's where vets, such as my practice, actually go out of our way to try and foster that kind of culture so that basically pets are handled with respect and kindness, positive reinforcement only. To, as Adele points out, encourage situations like that. So especially pets that are finding a veterinary visit difficult, they just come in for a treat. And, a pet and a cuddle and off they go. And I've seen it work amazingly well.
Okay.
So it's worth it. It's worth trying.
Yeah. And
you just need
what
to
about
make sure your
the
vet's
use,
part of that.
What know? About the use of tranquilizers? I said it yesterday to Joe. I said Valium, but again, that's how you get your cat.
Some people might need that.
The people, not the animals, right? Let's take some calls because we have so many and we're getting flooded with emails. So we're just asking you to be patient. Let's talk to Ira in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Ira.
Hi. I have six dogs and, I'm in constant close physical contact with them. They're up on my bed. We sleep together. They're licking me on the face. Sometimes my mouth, sometimes my eyes. And listening to this now, I need to ask you a question. My dogs have never had any heartworm protection. Some of them are 12, 13 years old. If I start giving them these chemicals now at 13 years old, so hours I'm talking about, am I putting them at risk because of whatever is in those oral vaccinations?
No. first of all, no pet should get heartworm preventative without seeing a veterinarian first, because that is, I was answering off the cuff, but the wider issue is to make sure that a veterinarian physically sees your dogs and reassures you on that score. The other thing is that we would have to test them for heartworm disease, because if they already have heartworm disease, putting them on preventative has consequences. But also to do an intestinal parasite screen, because chances are, at least some of your dogs are going to have intestinal parasites. But the, life is all about risk-reward balance. And to our knowledge, no risks to the medication at all, whereas the consequence to not putting them on these preventatives is expensive and dangerous. So I would say absolutely get your dogs to see a veterinarian in your area and get them put on the things they need.
Okay, well, that's good advice, because I don't, as much pleasure as I get out of these dogs licking my face, I don't need to get roundworms and my eyeballs will go blind.
You're right. No. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Okay, Ira, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Let's speak to Jonathan in Coconut Creek. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hi. I have a a 1.5-year-old cockapoo, and I was wondering, whenever she gets excited, especially in the morning when she sees me, she pales a little bit, and I was wondering if that's physical.
Wait a minute. You just cut out a little bit. Say it again. The first thing when she sees you in the morning, what happens?
She piddles a little bit.
She piddles. Okay.
Adele? I was wondering if that's a physical or a mental thing. A behavioral thing, and also what are ways, if there are any, to address it?
Well, Jonathan, it's both physical and psychological. On one end of the spectrum, the dog is highly excited. A lot of this excitement may come from you or other family members that are really happy to see the dog in the morning. On the other end, being that this excitement physically gets her to release some urine, one of the things that we want to do is just basically control the excitement. So first thing in the morning, you just don't want to address her at all. It's going to be harder for you than the dog. Don't address her at all. Just walk over to the outside or wherever she needs to go do her business and have her do her business first and then give her a little praise after she releases, because in the morning her bladder is going to be more full. Kind of like when you leave the house and she's alone for a while and you come back, her bladder is going to be more full as well. So those are the times that you don't want to give any sort of high excitement. Instead, take her out to go pee first, and then you can give her pet and praise at that point.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing.
Right. Okay.
But even when it's empty, sometimes she'll come back inside and pee, from peeing, and be so happy and so piddle a little bit.
So on the other side, Dr. Kupke, is there any? Could there be anything wrong?
Yes, she could have something amiss internally. She could have a urinary tract infection. Is your dog spayed?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. There is actually a congenital condition called a persistent diverticulum, where their bladder is stretched across their abdominal wall and so that it never empties properly. These are all things to check out. Generally speaking, it's important to rule out medical possible causes when you're looking at a situation like this. And then if there's nothing medically amiss, then pursue the behavioral.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for calling. And Mia in Boca Raton?
Yes, hi.
Hi, go ahead. Welcome.
Hi, welcome. So I'm a dog groomer in Boca Raton. I've been working with animals since 1974. I've dealt with literally thousands of dogs and cats. I was involved in rescue and rescuing cats, dogs, and reptiles.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to address this to the people that are a little concerned about the transmission of diseases. In all my years of all these animals, I've never contracted a disease. And I have worked very intimately as a dog groomer with all kinds of animals, very, very filthy animals coming out of very bad situations. And I've never gotten sick. So I think the chances, while it's certainly a good thing to be aware of, I don't think people need to get really overly concerned about it to the point where they're going to consider putting their animals outside or not.
Right.
Right.
We don't want that, Mia.
Allowing them to, you know, be close to family members. So
right.
That's been my experience.
And in mine, I wanted to underline the fact that I don't think any pet should be left outside unattended, not in Florida. It's a dangerous situation. We've got toxic toads. It's very, very hot. We see a lot of heat stroke this time of year. You know, the so-called indoor-outdoor cat, that's a very dodgy situation because they can get hurt. They can get physically harmed. Keep your pets indoors. You know, go outside to do potty, but bring them back in, and that'll keep them from contracting things that potentially could make a person ill.
Right. Okay, Mia, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. Todd would like an update on Lyme disease being spread in Florida via pets, mosquitoes, lizards, et cetera. What does the CDC say about Lyme disease being spread in Florida? Do you know?
Well, the Lyme disease organism is part of a very specific life cycle that involves a tick called Ixodes damini and the white-tailed deer. And you need both the tick and the deer to see Lyme in an environment. Now, it's debatable how prevalent Lyme disease is in southeast Florida. I can say that I have not seen a case of Lyme in my practice that's from this area, but of course, we do have Lyme disease further north, but literally it's a tick and white-tailed deer that have to be part of the life cycle. So, you know, at the end of the day, as with the other diseases we talked about, leptospirosis, for example, there's an excellent vaccine against Lyme disease, and I would ensure that dogs in particular are on a monthly oral tick preventative, and that way you should be completely protected.
And before the break, we'll take one more question from Meg. Her dog is heartworm positive, just finished getting all three heartworm shots. Can you explain a little about the treatment side effects while she's healing, and are the treatments usually successful?
My understanding is that treatments are always successful, provided you put your pet on monthly heartworm preventative after the treatment cycle is complete. The three injections are designed to physically kill the adult heartworms that live in the heart of the infected dog. So the most important take-home message, and I'm sure your veterinarians already stressed this, is to keep your pet very, very quiet for a minimum healing period. Different opinions as to how long that would be, but I think 6 weeks is a good ballpark, because the heartworms have to be broken down by your dog's immune system and dissolve. They get all excited right after that treatment. The heartworms could dislodge and go to important parts of the body and block arteries. So you have to be patient. The injections have killed the organism, but now the organism has to dissolve and dissipate, and that can take some time.
And these heartworms are totally preventable with
oral heartworm preventative.
Oral heartworm preventative.
Yeah, I mean, okay. it's honestly a disease that we shouldn't be seeing in pets at all. Every heartworm positive dog I see, it's because somebody stopped or never gave the preventative.
Okay. We're speaking with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Miedes of Canine Advisors. A short break on today's Topical Currents. We'll be back. We'll speak to you, Jeanette, next. Stay with us. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman, and we're visiting with Adele Miedes from Canine Advisors and Dr. Ian Kupke from Sable Chase Animal Clinic. We have lots of emails. I just want to assure you that if we don't get to your email, Dr. Kupke and Adele are very, very kind enough to take them. I pass them through to them, and then they will get back to you. So just know that if I don't read it, it will still be answered at some point when they can. Okay, let's talk to Jeanette in Miami. Jeanette, welcome.
Hi. I have a question. My friend has a small English bulldog. She had a bad positive throat culture, and she was sick for about 10 days, and then her dog got it. Does that happen often?
It's not in my experience, but again, I would not necessarily conclude that your dog caught the same thing that your friend had. This is a particularly bad time of year for upper respiratory complaints. We're seeing canine flu. We're seeing Bordetella. We're seeing bacterial upper respiratories. Very, very prevalent. So I wouldn't necessarily think that because the dog got an upper respiratory after your friend did, that the two are related.
Okay, because they treated the dog with antibiotics.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay, Jeanette, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, and we'll talk to Camilla in North Miami Beach. Hi, Camilla.
Hi. My question is, I have two cats, and one cat would sleep on the bed at night for a good 10 years. About 2 weeks ago, the other cat is now switched, and the original cat no longer goes on the bed. The other cat now sleeps on the bed. I just wondered what caused that.
How old is the new cat?
Well, 9 years old. I mean, not new, but, you know, we've had them both about the same time. One is 13 and one is 9.
One is 13 and one is 9. Okay, but so you've had them both for years?
Yes, for years. Now, the only difference is recently is that the younger cat has lost the sight in one eye, mostly, most of the sight in one eye. So I don't know if that makes a difference to why they would behaviorally change.
I don't know that in itself would make a difference, but there's certainly other factors that I think would make a difference. I don't know that we're getting the full story here, or that mm-hmm. you may be aware of other factors that are
yes.
going on there. It is interesting that it's gone in that direction, but there's some sort of purpose behind it, that the animals don't just do things out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I'd want to see there is, you know, ask a few other questions regarding how they were before.
Mm-hmm.
How were the sleeping arrangements and so forth? And have you noticed difference in behaviors in other areas, not just in sleeping?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's use of kitty litter or their hierarchy in a cat tree, for example,
mm-hmm.
Or in other ways that they have mm-hmm. interacted.
Well, they do switch off when eating their food, their plate. They'll switch off and eat each other's food in the middle of the meal.
Are they both on the same food?
Yes.
Okay. That's not that big of a deal. Really.
Okay.
It's an interesting behavior. I would like to know more about it. You're certainly welcome to send us an email and perhaps we can talk in more detail.
Well, thank you.
About mm-hmm. this particular case.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, Camilla.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks very much for calling.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take an emailer. This is Marushka. She's a dog trainer, or he, in Fort Lauderdale, and I'm constantly approached by people who are into forceful training and interacting with their dogs, including trainers. Would you clarify your position on the use of aversive equipment like choke, prong, and shock collars? We know now that it's based on science that pain and force only create dogs to shut down. It's such a sad thing when you know about dogs' body language.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. All equipment can be used improperly. You can get a regular leash, and you can use that leash improperly. There's a number of different ways of getting dogs to do things, and it's always better to be able to psychologically get them to respond to you. If there's pain involved, the dog has a tail tucked or ears back, that kind of dog language is not dog language that you want to see in the training itself. There are ways of being able to get the dog's attention without having to provide the pain to the dog, but rather kind of snap the dog to look back at you, and then you praise him at that point. And at the end of the day, everything you do should end in a praise. That's a very important part of any type of training or training management or technique. You want to make sure that everything ends in a praise. At the end of the day, the dog needs to like what they're doing and want to do it for you again.
Okay, Marushka, hope that helps. And we'll speak to Laura in North Miami. Hi, Laura.
Hi. What to do about mites, ear mites in cats?
Oh, that's actually an easy one. There's a monthly product called Revolution that's labeled for prevention and treatment of ear mites in cats. That's actually the only effective, reliable preventative treatment I know of. So that's something your vet should be able to get you.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Laura. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Again, our number is 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. Email is radio@wlrn.org. Michelle wants to know if the current dog flu is contagious by transmission on clothing. We own a holistic pet store in downtown Lake Worth, Paws on the Avenue, and we welcome customer pets. If a pet with the flu comes in and brushes against our clothes, can we bring any contamination home with us to our own pets? What dangers are at the dog parks or with doggy daycare or overnight facilities? Also, they put a fresh bowl of water down, and a lot of dogs drink from it. Can that transmit diseases?
Well, in that sense, I would say similar to people, it's definitely known that it's aerosol transmitted, close contact transmitted, and they call a fomite transmission. Fomite basically means if an animal who's shedding live virus leaves a deposit of that virus in bodily secretions on an object and another animal contacts that, in theory, yes, they could catch it. This is actually a huge flu season for us. I got to tell you that when I get home, I strip off my scrubs at the door, throw them in the laundry, and that way I'm confident that I'm not bringing home nasty things to my dogs. But on the other hand, I also have my dogs correctly vaccinated against the flus, so in terms of the flu, I'm not too worried about it. Bacterial upper respiratory, I am.
Okay. So there you go, Michelle, on that. Okay, let's speak to Rachel in Fort Lauderdale. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes.
About a week and a half ago, my one-year-old kitten, she got out, and I couldn't find her. She came back home the next day. I'm afraid she might have gotten pregnant because since then her attitude towards me has completely changed. Mm. She no longer sleeps in the bed. She won't allow me to pick her up and pet her. I'm concerned she's pregnant, and I'm also wondering if any such thing as a kitten abortion exists.
Well, I think first things first, Kitty should be checked out by a veterinary professional, and that that possibly explored. I would also say that Kitty should be spayed if there's a pregnancy. Yes, spay early. But first of all, get her checked out, because she could have a bite wound somewhere that's festering that hasn't come out as an abscess yet, or she might have picked up an illness. We don't know what your kitten's vaccine status is, but I would say yes, get the kitty checked out by a veterinarian, if only for your peace of mind.
Rachel, did you want her to be an indoor outdoor cat, or is she
indoor?
Indoor. She escaped.
Yes, she escaped.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you gotta guard against that, right?
Yes.
She came back very hard.
She came back in the same day, and when did she start showing the difference in behaviors?
She came home the next day.
Or the next
with,
day.
seems to be the boy cat walked her home. But okay.
How chivalrous.
At least it was a nice boy cat.
Yeah, at least that much. But her attitude towards me has completely changed.
Did it change right after she got there, or shortly
after?
Yeah,
as soon as she got home. So she spent the night away. She came home the next morning.
Well, she didn't get pregnant this is likely not because of a pregnancy issue, because it was just one night, one day.
Sure.
So likely something else happened in her little escape there.
But definitely get the doctor said, she could have been bitten, or something.
Yeah,
she needs to get to the vet. Okay, Rachel?
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you for calling.
Bye-bye.
All right, our last break. We have lots of calls, lots of emails. We're getting to you as we can. Dr. Ian Kupke, Sable Chase Animal Clinic, Adele Mieres from Canine Advisors. By the way, the websites are canineadvisors.com
and sablechaseanimalclinic.com, and that's Sable as in S-A-B-A-L.
A-L. Okay. All right. And that last break, we'll be right back. Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman. It's our At Your Service Pet Care Show with Dr. Ian Kupke of Sable Chase Animal Clinic and Adele Mieres of Canine Advisors. We have an emailer. Stan has an indoor 2-year-old neutered vaccinated tabby in excellent health other than regular intermittent spasms in his back and twitching of his tail. This causes him to chase his tail, act spooked. His tail act spooked. Okay. He doesn't overgroom, does not have fleas. When we seek assistance from local vets, they're compassionate about the situation, but very dismissive about the symptoms and offer no relief for our suffering kitty. Can you recommend medication, treatment, or a vet in Palm Beach County, Broward, or Miami-Dade who may be able to assist us with this? His brother exhibits none of the same problems. So which one of you?
Well, I think both of us to some extent. The one thing that I would encourage a vet to check out is a condition called feline hyperesthesia syndrome. It's not that common, but it does sometimes manifest in the behavior that Kitty is manifesting. So I would definitely look at that. There's also a board-certified behaviorist up there, Dr. Lisa Radosta, and she may actually help you in that respect because she's in the Palm Beach area. So that would be a good thing to check out. As we've said before in this program, there are possible behavioral explanations, but first of all, make absolutely certain there's nothing amiss with your kitty cat. I'd even think about doing some x-rays to make sure there's nothing spinal going on. If there's some kind of spinal problem, some congenital anomaly that might explain this behavior, it's certainly worth investigating, definitely.
Yeah, if it's, I definitely would make sure that the physiological aspect of it has been checked out in all aspects. If it does come down to behavioral, one of the things you probably want to do is see when is the cat doing it. Is a certain time of the day? Is a certain event happening, like is somebody getting home? Is the other cat doing something else to cause this cat to do this? So oftentimes I have seen it in dogs that do it for attention. Dogs that have been kept like in puppy mill type of situations, a lot of times will do it because they have nothing better to do, so it becomes a neurosis. However, I would definitely address the physiological aspects first and go into behavioral.
Okay, and let's speak to Dorian and Kendall.
Hi.
Hi, Dorian.
Hi. Yeah, I have a cat about 4 years old, and I let it go outside in the patio. It's a covered screen patio with, you know, mosquito, and just for a little bit, basically an indoor cat. But I've noticed it does have fleas. She picked up some fleas, so I got some flea powder. But my question is, there's also, like, she develops sometimes, like, little pink spots.
Yeah, that's a reaction to the flea bites, and flea powder's garbage. Don't use it.
You know what? That would be a problem because she doesn't like the collar.
Well, the collar isn't much better either. There are excellent anti-flea products that are actually licensed for use in cats. I can think of two right off the bat, something called Revolution, something called Cheriston, that are very effective and safe for cats. But okay. I would not expect any success from a collar or from powder. The other thing too is that medically speaking, a porch kitty is an outdoor kitty. So you're still exposing your cat to viruses, to fleas, to ear mites, and make sure your cat is on a monthly flea and ear mite preventative and vaccinated as defined by annually if the kitty's lifestyle includes going outdoors, even to a porch environment.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, you got the names of those medications and...
Yeah, Revolution, and the other one was...
There's another one called Cheriston. Of the two, I prefer Revolution because it covers a lot more than just fleas.
Revolution. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Dorian, thanks for calling. Okay, and here's one for you, Adele, which I relate to. It's Terry in Boca. Hi, Terry.
Hi, Terry. Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I have an indoor cat who, when she can get a hold of them, likes to pull cords and other cords right in half. Or if she gets a hold of a string or an elastic band, she'll chew them in half. And I don't know what might be causing that or if there's something I could try to do to stop her.
Cats just love to do that. Anything... any sort of cord that they can chase. When I work with dog cases where the cat is not the issue, it's the dog, and I advise them to keep a leash on the dog, I already know if there's a cat in the house, we can't do that because the dog just moves. The cat's going to follow that leash, and he's going to try to paw it and grab it and all that. And Bonnie and I were just talking about her cat doing something similar.
We were literally just talking about
just
that
talking
seconds
about
ago.
So, you know, a few important things.
She doesn't chew all the cords, but every once in a while she'll get a hold of one and I'll wake up and it'll be in two pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they love to chew the cords. I mean, obviously, if you can keep the cords away from the cat, that would be a good preventative to begin with. But just to, let's say you have an old cord that you're already going to replace, then you may want to use that as bait. You can spray a little bitter apple. It's a spray. You get it in any Amazon.
Bitter apple. Mm-hmm.
Bitter apple. It's a spray that's used actually for hot spots in dogs. It has a bitter agent. All you're doing is you're spraying a little bit of it on the cord itself. It works if the cat's putting his mouth on the cord. If he's just using it with the paws, then it's not going to work as much. However, if he's putting his mouth on the cord and trying to bite the cord and pull it down, it's likely going to discourage him. You probably want to do that maybe with like a fake cord that you can hang in the same area that your other cord would be at, so that then when your other cord hangs there, the cat's not going to want to go to that cord.
Okay,
yes,
Terry.
I'll have to try it. Thank you so much for your advice.
Thanks so much for calling. And we'll speak to Blaze in Tamarack. Hi, Blaze.
Hello, Bonnie. I have a question. I've got about a 10-year-old Cocker Spaniel. She needs lots of haircuts, and she has lately been coming home almost lame a couple of days after the haircut because she does have some difficulty with her hind legs with strength because of her age. And I wanted to know, should we medicate her before she gets a haircut or just after she starts showing the real pain and not being able to move very well?
Well, that is not an excessive age for a Cocker Spaniel, but it's basically late middle age, if you will. She's probably developing some arthritis. Perhaps she has some underlying joint problems. I think the first thing to do is to try to get to the bottom of where this pain's coming from. It's important that a doctor actually assess that and make sure that there's an unknown underlying cause before we dismiss it as just being arthritis. There could be something she's lived with all her life, like hip dysplasia, that's starting to be a problem for her now. And there are a range of excellent medications, some of them not actually pain control, but things that'll actually help the joints. But it's definitely something you'd want to talk to a vet about and get her on a program that keeps her pain-free. Absolutely. Well,
okay, we are already using a glucosamine-type thing that was recommended by her veterinarian, mm-hmm. as well as the pain medication, when we've told him what happens after the groomer. Because I believe it's because they're probably yanking around on her back legs to get her to hold still and get her hair cut. And it,
right.
Because I've noticed when you kind of, if you can see that she's got pain in her, you know, mm-hmm. hindquarters, mm-hmm. just for the way she walks and can't jump up on the bed anymore. So,
and you may want to anticipate those events by seeing if there's another medication that can be given short term, immediately prior and immediately after the grooming event. Make sure the groomer you're using is gentle. You know,
that's important.
That's yeah. really important. I mean, as Ajel and I were talking about earlier, the movement is to avoid any negativity with regard to handling pets. You know,
yeah,
kindness,
maybe the groomer
kindness always
a different maybe yeah. a different groomer would you be know, in well, order blaze.
Yeah,
a standard yeah. groomer just puts a loop, a noose around the dog's neck, and the dog has to stay standing there for a while. An older dog, that may not be ideal. So some of the techniques I've seen from some groomers in the past few years, they'll use a little hammock to sustain yes, the dog's yes, weight yes, a little yeah. bit in the yeah. bottom. Some have used like a little wooden bench that I don't even know if it's custom made or not, but they're all ideas that basically would help sustain the dog's weight while the dog has to be standing yeah. Because we're doing that area in the grooming process.
We are bringing the dog home to be groomed. We're having one of the mobile groomers come so we can actually talk to them and observe and let
right.
them know that it really is important. That so
yeah.
But, all right.
Sounds good.
Well, I just wanted to know if the pre-medication, it's a medicine that the doctor gave us for pain, and it helps her immensely because an hour or two after she takes it, she can actually walk normally.
Good.
So
good.
It
good.
Appears just, to me to be pain.
Be okay. very, very careful. You're dosing it as it's directed. Don't
yes,
go
do.
Giving extras.
Okay, Blaze, thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, I think we're out of time.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sorry, Lewis and Elizabeth and Katie. And again, the emails we will forward to the doctor and to Adele, and they will get to you in their time when they can, because there are usually a lot of them. We want to thank you very much for being with us today. Dr. Ian Kupke is with Sable Chase Animal Clinic in Kendall. And let me give you the email. It is askdrk@sablechaseanimalclinic.com. That's SABAL, chaseanimalclinic.com. And Adele, your email?
Edel, EDEL, @canineadvisors.com. Letter K, number 9, advisors.com.
Okay, and again, the websites are canineadvisors.com, K, the number 9, advisors.com, and sablechaseanimalclinic.com. Thank you both very much for all your information.
Thank you for having us,
always
Bonnie.
A pleasure.
Always fun.
That wraps up today's At Your Service edition. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for your patience on the phones. Our lead producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from online producer Jason Zapka. Polly Landis is associate producer, and thanks also to Lynn Kupke, who has a lot to do with these shows. We covered lots of ground. You might want to download the whole program at our website, WLRN.org. They're free and also linkable to a friend. Tomorrow it's live coverage of the Miami-Dade School Board meeting at 1 o'clock. Then Joe and I are back again Thursday with a Doreen's Deals consumer segment with Doreen Christensen, as well as Linda Gassenheimer's food and dining segments, summer grilling tips, plus restaurant whiz Matt Meltzer of Thrillist Media Group. And thank you so much for listening and participating today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News.